Hello, welcome to Foreign Matters, coming this week from Gaza, where things get better and worse all the time. The sight of a brand new Chevrolet with 2010 plates cruising through downtown Gaza City raises the question, how did it get there? Until this month, the partial Israeli-Egyptian blockade of the Gaza Strip banned the import of vehicles. Now they can come through the borders, but even though they're allowing them, they can't come through the borders, because of internal Palestinian politics. So the Chevy and the dozens of other new cars seen around town are still coming in via the smuggling tunnels under the Gaza-Egypt border. A video I got hold of shows a bulldozer pulling a large car through a tunnel. Another, published on the web, shows two cars driving through en route to the showrooms of Gaza City. All this ingenuity comes at a price, both financial and human. The human cost is in the dozens of lives lost due to collapsing tunnels. The financial cost of paying the tunnel builders and the smuggler doubles the price of the car once in Gaza. I suppose it's a sort of extra import delivery tax. For example, a mid-spec Chevrolet Cruze Auto, which sells in the UK for about £15,000, was on sale at about £30,000. I took one for a test drive. Very nice. That soft American suspension dealt reasonably well with what passes for roads. It had aircon, but I put the windows down anyway, put an arm on the sill, cruised towards the beach road, and pimped my blockade. So who in Gaza can afford to do that in a brand new Chevy? Well, Gaza's middle and upper classes don't feature much in news reports, but they do exist. This explains why there are swimming pools and water parks, boutique hotels, excellent restaurants, and a brand new shopping mall. They're doing quite well out of the minority of those lucky enough to have jobs, and they're doing well out of the journalists, diplomats, and aid workers who frequent them. The journalists especially like the Aldera Hotel, which is a lovely boutique hotel right on the beach, only about £75 a night, including breakfast. And over at the Roots restaurant, we media types, who've spent the day profiling the Palestinians' misery, can have a very nice meal for only about, £30 a head, wine not included. Of course, most people can't afford this. The United Nations estimates that 40% of people are unemployed. Of those in work, about a third are on the government payroll, and the cultural norm here is that monies earned are used to take care of the extended family. That spreads the available cash thinly. But the well-stocked supermarkets, luxury goods and new cars shows there is a level of society which can afford them. That stratum is small, but it's wrong to depict all Gazans as if they spend their lives in abject poverty scrabbling through the ruins of buildings bombed by the Israeli Defence Forces. The poverty levels seen here can be found in many parts of the Middle East. What is different is how widespread it is. Added to the fact that even if you can escape poverty, it's hard to escape from Gaza. One reason why, to the Israelis' intense anger, Prime Minister David Cameron recently called the territory a giant prison camp. Nor can people escape the fallout from the continuing bitterness between Hamas, which rules Gaza, and their rivals Fatah, who control the West Bank. Starting this month, Israel is allowing the cars to be imported, as we said, and it should lower prices. But the cars can't come through because Hamas and Fatah can't agree who has the authority to control the car import business. There's a problem with passports. They're processed in the Ramallah, in the West Bank. But Fatah in the West Bank won't send blank passports to Gaza because they don't recognise Hamas as having the authority to process them. So, ordinary Palestinians have to go through a tortuous procedure to try and get them from the West Bank, and those that fail remain trapped. Electricity. There isn't enough. You now see generators lining the streets, powering shops. They're everywhere. This is because the Fatah government in the West Bank pays Israel for electricity for both the West Bank and Gaza. Hamas are supposed to pay Fatah its share. Fatah says they haven't paid. So Fatah doesn't pay Israel. So Israel doesn't always send enough electricity to Gaza. Whose fault is that? Well, that usually depends on which side you're on. I'm on everyone's side. So I think they're all to blame. So the partial blockade partially remains, and some of it because of internal Palestinian politics, and cars still come into Gaza the dangerous, illegal, and costly way. And the Palestinians pay the high prices in so many ways. That's Foreign Matters. See you next time.